ಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ ನಮಃ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಪ್ರಿಷ್ಠಾಯ ಭೂತಲೆ ಶ್ರೀಮತೆ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಯಾಮಿನೇ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತೀ ದೇವಿ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಿಣಿ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಚಾರಿಣಿ ಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾ ಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯ ಚ ದೂತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀನಿವಾಸ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ಟುಡೇ ವಿ ವಿಲ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕಸ್ ದ ಲಾಸ್ಟ್ 6 ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ದಿ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತಾ, ದ ಥರ್ಡ್ ಸೆಕ್ಷನ್, ವಿಚ್ ಇಸ್ ಆಲ್ಸೋ ನೋನ್ ಆಸ್ ದ ಜ್ಞಾನ ಸೆಕ್ಷನ್, ಹೌ ಜ್ಞಾನ ಲೀಡ್ಸ್ ಟು ಭಕ್ತಿ. ಸೊ ಇನ್ ದ ಪ್ರಿವಿಯಸ್ ಸೆಕ್ಷನ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಎಸ್ಟಾಬ್ಲಿಷ್ಡ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಸುಪ್ರಿಮಸಿ ಓವರ್ ದಿ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮನ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಆಲ್ಸೋ ಓವರ್ ದ ಡೆಮಿಗಾಡ್ ವರ್ಷಿಪ್, ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದ ಲಾಸ್ಟ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಕನ್ಕ್ಲೂಡೆಡ್ by a glorification of devotional service, the accommodating nature of devotional service, different people can practice at different levels, and the glorification of the qualities of a devotee. So now Krishna's mission is carried forward by Arjuna by asking a question. So now the Bhagavad Gita is one of the most stable scriptures in Vedic history. Stable means that there are practically no changes in the Gita. If you look up the Shankaracharya's Gita, we look the Gita today or Baldev Vidya Bhushan's commentary, 700 verses are more or less the same. Maybe some small letters changes might be there, but otherwise there is no changes because it's a small book and very well preserved. So Baldev Vidya Bhushan's Gita, which Prabhupada takes for commenting on, that has one verse which is not there in the Gita Paras, Gorakhpur Gita, which is there. So this question which Arjuna asks in 13.1 is not there in that verse, in that Gita. But actually that question enables to understand the flow between this and other chapter. Now, even if the question is there or not there, the Krishna's words stay the same. So, but why suddenly Krishna starts talking about Purusha and Prakriti? That can be understood when we see that Krishna is being asked a question by Arjuna. Now, why does Arjuna ask this question? Arjuna basically asks three questions. Prakritim Purusham Chaiva Kshetra Kshetra Eva Cha Etad Veditum Icchami Jnanam Jnayam Cha Keshava. So, Kshetra and Kshetragya, Purusha and Prakriti, and Jnana and Jnayam. So, basically just now Krishna has established that personal worship is better than impersonal worship. Now all these are terms associated with Jnana and Sankhya, which is mostly impersonalistic. So Arjuna wants to clarify the meaning of these terms so that they can be understood correctly. Because otherwise people think that all this is impersonalistic. Now, so 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is the chapter which the impersonalists love the most. And it is the most Upanishadic. Upanishadic means the Upanishads and the Vedas have particular styles. The Vedas have a style of having very effusive poetry. Effusive poetry means that poetic glorification of particular deities is there. So the Vedic style is seen in the 11th chapter of the Gita, where Arjuna is glorifying Krishna. Tamadi deva purusha puranas tamasya vishvasya param nidhanam ಎತ್ತಿ ವೇದ್ಯಂ ಚ ಪರಂ ಚ ಧಾಮ ತ್ವಯಾತತಂ ವಿಶ್ವ ಅನಂತ ರೂಪ. ಡಿಸ್ಕ್ರೈಬಿಂಗ್ ದ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಥ್ರೂ ಎಫ್ಯೂಸಿವ್ ಪ್ರೇಸ್, ವೆರಿ ಬ್ಯೂಟಿಫುಲ್, ವೆಲ್ ಕಂಪೋಸ್ಡ್, ಪ್ರೊಫೌಂಡ್ಲಿ ಮೀನಿಂಗ್ಫುಲ್ ಪೊಯೆಟ್ರಿ. ದಟ್ ಈಸ್ ದ ವೇದಿಕ್ ಸ್ಟೈಲ್, ವೆರ್ ವೇದಾಸ್ ಆರ್ ಫಿಲ್ಡ್ ವಿತ್ ಹಿಮ್ಸ್. ಸಾಮವೇದ ಇಸ್ ಫಿಲ್ಡ್ ವಿತ್ ಹಿಮ್ಸ್ ಕಂಟೈನಿಂಗ್ ದ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಆಫ್ ದಿ ವೇರಿಯಸ್ ದೇವತಾಸ್, ಅಲ್ಟಿಮೇಟ್ಲಿ ಅಂಡ್ ಇಂಡೈರೆಕ್ಟ್ಲಿ ಲಾರ್ಡ್ ವಿಷ್ಣು. ಸೊ ದಟ್ ಇಸ್ ವೇದಿಕ್ ಸ್ಟೈಲ್. But the Bhagavad Gita also has some sections which are Upanishadic style. Upanishadic style means what? The style is not just the length of the verse. The style is the manner of presentation. So the Upanishads are often very enigmatic. very contradictory thing, paradoxical. Like we have the Ishopanishad, Taddure, Tadvantike, Tadejati, Tannaijati. That absolute truth walks, does not walk. That absolute truth is close, is far. So this is Upanishadic style where nothing is told very clearly. Why nothing is told very clearly in the Upanishads? Because the Jnani is, if things are told very clearly, then things are so simple. This cannot be the absolute truth. Something has to be stretching their brains. Then they feel, this must be something meaningful. So Krishna provides for the sense gratification of the karmis through the karmakanda section. And he provides for the sense gratification of the Jnanis through the jnanakanda section. Their sense gratification is intellectual speculation basically. So now the 13th chapter is Upanishadic. And because it is Upanishadic in the style, there is a lot of paradoxical statements. So, now Prabhupada has titled this chapter as Nature, the Enjoyer and Consciousness. So, nature refers to Prakriti, the enjoyer refers to Purusha, the Supreme Lord. And consciousness refers to the living entity. So, these three are talked about in this chapter. And first Krishna starts by telling that there are two Kshetragyas. The one Kshetragya is the local Kshetragya, the other is the global Kshetragya. Not the global, the universal. Not the universal, the trans-universal. Because that Kshetragya Paramatma is there in all the universes also. So, there are two Kshetragyas. The Mayavadis try to conflate the two Kshetragyas into one. But the way Krishna has written it is very clear that there are two. So, for example, if I say I am in the room, Mukundilapu is also in the room. That means there are two people, I and Mukundilapu. If I say I am in the room and Mukundilapu is also in the room. If I try to reinterpret it, I am in the room, I am also Mukundilapu. It doesn't make much sense. So Krishna is saying, Kshetragyam cha api mam viddhi sarva kshetreshu bharata. In the second verse he says that one who is in the body is called a Kshetragya, but there is another Kshetragya who is also in all bodies. So there are two Kshetragyas basically. And in Krishna, for the first time because he is quoting, he is explaining Gyan, he says, what is the way to understand Gyan? It is by quoting Shastra. So Krishna quotes Sadhu and Shastra. Rishi bhir bahuda gitam chando bhir vividhai prutak Brahma Sutra Padaishchaiva Hetu Madhbhirvi Nishchitai. So the Rishis have explained this earlier, and now the Vedanta Sutra, the Brahma Sutra has also talked about it. Now I will explain it clearly for you. So there Krishna describes first the Kshetra and Kshetragya. So Kshetra is the body. Kshetra is that part of Prakriti. Prakriti is material nature. That part of Prakriti over which a soul is given influence by his past karma. So this whole, this KGP voice is Prakriti. Now in that Prakriti, my body is also Prakriti. But I have influence over this Prakriti. I don't have influence over the whole IIT voice, KGP voice. So that part of Prakriti over which a soul is given influence by his past karma is called as Kshetra. And all of us, depending on our karma, get different Kshetras. Now, elephant has a huge kshetra. A soul in the elephant body has a huge kshetra. A soul in the microbe's body has a very tiny kshetra. So like that, this concept of kshetra is there. Then Krishna talks about jnana. Then there are the Prabhupada gives elaborate purports. And in the jnana section, the first thing Krishna says is, how does knowledge begin? Amanitvam adambitvam. It begins with humility. Manitvam adambitvam. Ahimsa shanti raja. And interestingly, when Krishna describes all the... when he is describing knowledge, he is not describing information, he is describing qualities. So the cultivation of these qualities constitutes knowledge. And if any activities are done which don't cultivate these qualities, that is ignorance. Etadjnanam iti proktam. So that is verses 8 to 12. And then Krishna also brings in bhakti over there. Mai chananya yogena bhakti ravibhichari. So avyabhichari bhakti means unbreakable devotional service. So avyabhichari bhakti is not the same as kevala bhakti. Kevala bhakti is pure devotion service. And avyabhichari bhakti is unbreakable devotion service. What is the difference between the two? Pure devotion service means that which is for the pleasure of Krishna. Unbreakable devotion service means a devotion service which is not stopped. So jnanis also, if they want to get liberation, they have to practice unbreakable devotion service. They cannot practice bhakti for some time, then do sense gratification again, then do bhakti. They do unbreakable devotion service. But their unbreakable devotion service is not pure. It is not for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. It is for their own liberation. Then Krishna after that describes the Gyan. He has described Gyan, the process of acquiring knowledge. Then he describes Gyan. And this is the most confusing section of the Gita. Because everything seems to be very confusing, paradoxical here. सर्वेन्द्रिय गुण आभासम सर्वेन्द्रिय विवर्जितम असक्तम सर्वगुण सर्वभुक्चैव निर्गुणम गुणभोक्तृच. He says that absolute truth, that Krishna doesn't know what that is. Is that the super soul? Is that the Brahman? Is that the Atma? Is that Bhagwan? That sarvendriya guna bhasam, that is the source of all senses, and that is without any senses. It doesn't make much sense to ordinary people. Now that is not attached to anyone, still that maintains everyone. That is inside everything, that is outside everyone. That is very far away, that is very close also. Bahirantasya bhutana acharam charam evacham. So these verses are very paradoxical. And actually here that was the verse, sarvataha pani padam tat sarvato akshishiro mukham. Everywhere are his hands and legs. But this verse when Advaita Acharya read, he got very puzzled. And he couldn't understand what is this verse referring to. So actually the Vedic scriptures use many words to describe the absolute truth. And Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagwan, this tripartite understanding of the absolute truth is the unique contribution of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Jiva Goswami. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains it to Sarvam Bhattacharya and Prakashan Saraswati. And you know that. So when Tad or Brahma or Ishvara or Paramatma, these words are used, they may be used in general sense, but each time the word is referring to either Bhagwan or Paramatma or Brahman. And when we understand it, then it becomes very clear. So everywhere are his hands and legs. What does that refer to? That refers to the Brahman. Brahman has hands and legs? Paramatma. Everywhere has hands and legs, you know. Super soul is not handless or legless. So that refers to the super soul. So basically, this section, the Mayavadi is interpreted to refer to Brahman. And they say that Brahman has taken temporary material form. But it doesn't make much sense from that point of view. Because Krishna is clearly saying that this is that absolute truth, that whatever that is transcendental. And then finally he says, Hridi sarvasya avasthitam. In 17th verse, that is situated in the heart of all living beings. At that point we understand, oh, this is the super soul that is being referred to. And then, after describing this, again Krishna says, although these verses are a feast for impersonalists, but you know, Krishna repeatedly brings in the medicine of bhakti in the feast, their feast also. They like the feast, but it is bhakti. Mad bhakta etad vijnaya mad bhava yopapadvite. Who will understand this? Mad bhakta. Only my devotees will understand this. And then after that, so here Krishna has completed the description of gaya. Gaya means that which is to be known. There are two things to be known. There is super soul and the soul. These two are to be known. Then Krishna starts describing prakriti and purusha. And this is also quite puzzling. First verse he describes in that section is 20th verse. Karya karana kartrutve hetu prakriti ruchyate. 21st verse he says. Purusha sukhadukkana bhoktrutve hetu ruchyate. So he says, material nature is the cause of all causes and effects. And the living entity is the cause of all pleasures and pains. So what does this mean? Material nature is the cause of all causes and effects. And the living entity is the cause of all pleasures and pains. So what this means is that, for example, if I hit my hand here. If I hit my hand here, now the hand contacting this surface, the big sound that comes, the collision that occurs, all that is a phenomenon of material nature. But to the extent I identify with the body, to that extent I will feel the pain. So the soul has occupied the body because of the desire to enjoy the body. So bhoktrutve, because of bhoktrutve, so he feels the happiness and distress. And the next verse is what Chakravarti Pad says, is the bija of the whole jnana section. Bija means seed. Just like every tree grows from a seed. So like that, in the 15th chapter, Krishna will describe the tree of material existence. And that tree of material existence grows from a bija. From a seed. What is that seed? That is this verse, 13.22. Any of you know it, so I'll recite it. You can follow after me. Purushah prakritisthohi bhungte prakriti jangunan karanam guna sangosya sadasadyoni janmasu. So the seed is, what is the seed of the material existence of the living entity is? Bhungte. Bhungte is a desire to enjoy. So Purushaha is the soul. The soul gets situated. Prakriti stohi. Souls get situated in material nature because of what reason? Bhungte, because of the desire to enjoy. And when it desires to enjoy, what does it desire to enjoy? Bhungte prakriti jan guna, the products of material nature, all the sense objects are the products of material nature. And karanam guna sangosya, by the association of these gunas, he takes different births in good and bad species. So, this verse is the seed that by the association of the modes, the living entity gets bound. And then Krishna will describe different ways in which the living entity can get liberated. Of course, there he describes, actually there is another purusha also. Upadrishta anumantacha bharta bhokta maheshwara. Paramatmaiti chapyokta dehesmin purusha paraha. So paraha, this living entity is bound in material nature, but there is another is paraha, is transcendental, that is the super soul. So wherever Krishna is describing the soul, he is also describing the super soul. And then he says, how can that super soul be realized? He describes it's possible by dhyan, it's possible by jnana, it's possible by karma yoga. And then he says, the best way is what? By hearing. Shruti parayana. Shruti parayana is to become a devotee of hearing. So when you become a devotee of hearing, then anye, they can also cross beyond death. And then after that, basically by here, by 27th verse, this chapter has answered Arjuna's questions. Arjuna asked in a particular sequence, Arjuna asked about Prakruta Purusha, Kshetra Kshetragya and Jnana and Gaya. So Krishna answers in a different sequence. Krishna starts with Jnana, Kshetra Kshetragya, then he talks about Jnana and Gaya, and then lastly he talks about Purusha and Prakriti. Because Krishna doesn't just want to answer the questions, Krishna wants Arjuna to get a systematic understanding, and therefore takes concepts one by one by one. But then Krishna, out of his enthusiasm, speaks 8 more verses to help Arjuna to understand how it all fits together. How it all fits together. Yes, okay, you understand Purusha, you understand Prakriti, but then what is the Jnana Chakshu? The Jnani has a Chakshu, a vision by which he sees that world. So that is described from verses 27 to 35. The 8 verses describe how the Jnani sees this material world. And then, that is very, again, very intricate section. And sometimes some verses are said to refer to Paramatma, some to the Jivatma. But the essential principle is that the Jnani is able to see that actually the soul is doing nothing. Which is the famous verse which says that the soul who thinks I am the doer is a fool? Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha. Ahankara vimudhatma. Karta ahamiti vande. Vimudhatma is a fool. So here in 30th verse Krishna describes one who is not a fool. Prakritya cha karmani kriyamane ni sarvasha yaha pashyati thatmanam akartaram sapashyati. So one who sees that actually material nature is doing everything and I am not doing anything, such a person is the actual seer. That means such a jnani, even the jnani has to eat some food. But when he eats food, he doesn't think, oh, I am eating and I am enjoying it. No, just the body is, the senses are coming in contact with sense objects, I am not doing anything at all. So when he has the detachment, basically, he understands that I am separate from the body and the body has to do its functions for its maintenance, so let it go on. So then such a person is on the verge of liberation. And then he gives 2 examples there, how such a soul doesn't get bound. Na karoti na lipyate. How does he not do anything and how does he not get bound? He gives 2 examples in verse 33 and 34. 33 gives the example just as the sky, the ether. Prabhupada again uses the word sky to translate ether. Thus, ether is present everywhere but doesn't get contaminated. Like that, the soul is there in different bodies but doesn't get contaminated. But then, somebody may argue like, okay, the ether is everywhere but the ether doesn't influence anything. And okay, ether is there but ether is not influencing you or me. Ether just exists. Where the soul is influencing the body. Because of the soul, I am speaking, my body is growing and undergoing various changes. So how is that possible? So for that, Krishna gives another example. So he gives the example of how the sun is situated in one place, but it illuminates and activates the whole universe. Like that, the soul is situated in one part of the body, the heart. But from there, the soul radiates out its consciousness. Yatha prakashayateka krutsnam lokam imam ravihi. Kshetram kshetritaha krishnam prakashayati bharata. So like that the soul illuminates and activates the whole body by radiating out consciousness into the body. So just as the changes on the earth, do they affect the sun? They don't affect the sun. Like that whatever happens to the body does not affect the soul. But that will happen only if the soul is not attached. The soul is attached, then a lot happens to the soul. That is the soul thinks a lot happens to me. And then Krishna concludes the chapter by saying that one who can understand this with Jnana Chakshu, he will get liberated and he will attain the supreme destination. Now when Krishna speaks this, he sees that Arjuna is looking quite perplexed. Because just now everything was very clear. Oh, chant, oh, practice devotional service, always think of me, I will deliver you. And now this whole complicated concepts. Purusha, Prakriti, Kshetra, Kshetra, Jnana, Chakshu. So Krishna, out of his compassion, decides to clarify things further. And therefore, as I said, the Bija Vakya was what? Purusha Prakriti Sohi Bhungte Prakriti Janmunam Karanam Guna Sangosya. So what is this gunas and how does the Sangha takes place? That is described in the next chapter. Because the whole living entity's bondage is caused by association with the modes. So although the modes have been referred to earlier, this is the Jnana section. Jnani is going to analyze everything threadbare. So it is said a Jnani is a merciless analyst. Merciless analyst. Everything will analyze. Okay, I'm feeling this pain. Is it real pain? No, but I'm not the body. How can the pain be there? They keep analysis with the sword of analysis. Naiti, 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 naiti. That is naiti. But they are so merciless that even when they come to Krishna, they don't have mercy on him also. They try to analyze him as a product of material nature. They try to go beyond him. So actually their mercilessness leads to, they don't show even mercy to their own Atma. But the Atma has a relationship with Paramatma. So they keep naiti, naiti. So Krishna wants to help these jnanis to get a proper vision. And interestingly, Krishna starts this chapter by saying that idam parambhuya pravakshami jnananam jnanavatam. 14 chapter says. Now I am going to tell you the supreme knowledge once again. So where has he told the supreme knowledge? He told 9th chapter and 10th chapter again. 10th chapter also he says paramam vachaha. So parambhuya pravakshami jnananam jnanam uttamam. And the munis who understand it, they don't take birth again. And what do you have to do? He says you don't just have to understand it. Idam jnanam upashritya. Upashritya means you have to take shelter of this knowledge. Not just understand this knowledge. So actually spiritual material knowledge, we stand above and we analyze it. This is like this, this is like this, this is like this, like this. But spiritual knowledge, we are below, because spiritual knowledge is not different from Krishna. So we don't analyze the knowledge. We analyze, but the purpose of analysis is not to control. The purpose of analysis is to take shelter. So idam jnanam upashritya. And Krishna says that you take shelter of this knowledge, then he describes the famous verses. How? He is a seed-giving father. And how the soul comes into this material world? In the womb of material nature. And then Krishna systematically starts analyzing the three modes. First he describes introductory characteristics of the modes. Then he describes how, don't think those modes are like one part of the world is in goodness, another part is in passion. Actually, all of them are competing in our own hearts. And then, so first he describes introductory characteristics. And then from verse 11 to 13 he describes the competition of the modes. And when goodness illuminates, what happens? So, sarva dvareshu dehesmi prakasham upachayate. When there is prakash, when there is light in all the senses. What does it mean, light in all the senses? I said, when there is light, is there we know what to do and what not to do? Where to go, where not to go, like that? When a person has discrimination, then he is in goodness. And then, passion he describes very interesting. Lobha pravritti arambha karvanama shamaspruha. He says, pravritti arambha. A person in passion always keeps starting new projects. I do this, I do that, I have to do that. New things he starts. And he doesn't complete anything. Because passion is characterized by creation. So then finally he describes ignorance. Ignorance with person doesn't do anything. Aprakasho apravrittischa. So in goodness there is prakash, there is illumination. In passion there is activity. In ignorance there is neither goodness, neither illumination nor activity. So then after that suddenly Krishna says, okay. Krishna describes the effects of the modes. First he describes the long-term effects, then medium-term effects, then immediate effects. So first long-term effects he says, what happens? Depending on the mode you are living in, which abode you will go to. Either you go to upper planet, stay over here only, or go down. Then he describes, if a person stays in more goodness throughout his life, he will gradually get purified. Karmana sukruttasyahu sattvikam nirmalam phalam. And if he stays in in passion, rajasastu phalam dukkham. And in ignorance, ajnanam tamasahapal. We go into more and more into darkness. And then Krishna describes about how, what is the instant result of each of these modes? Sattvat sanjayate jnanam. As soon as we come to goodness, our perception becomes clear. Rajaso lobha evacha. As soon as we come in passion, we are greedy. More, 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 more. And pramada moha bhavato ajnanam evacha. So agyan is the result of ignorance. And then he describes how different destinations. You will go up by passion, you will go up by goodness, go down by ignorance, and stay here only by passion. And after, now it would seem the chapter is completed. But Krishna, now the most important part is coming. Because Krishna doesn't want Arjuna to go up, stay here or go down. He wants him to get out. So, don't just go up, but get out. Go up means go to the heavenly plane. Get out means go to the spiritual world. Then Krishna describes, by goodness you will go up. But if you transcend the modes, then you can get out. And for transcending the modes, you have to understand that you don't have to be in goodness also. You have to go beyond goodness. Understand, actually only the modes are active. Nanyam gunebhya kartaram yada drashtam pashyati. And one can see only the modes are acting and actually I am doing nothing. And there is a Supreme Lord who is beyond the modes, who can save me. You take shelter of him, then you can get liberated. And immediately Arjuna asks the question. Okay, Arjuna, now this is the first question that Arjuna is asking in the 14th chapter. At the junction of 13th and 14th chapter, there was no question. So Arjuna asks, please tell me three questions he asks. Kair lingais trin gunanetan atito bhavati prabho. What are the symptoms of somebody who has transcended the modes? Kim acharaha. Symptoms mean what are his internal perceptions. How will I know that I have transcended the modes? Kim achara, what is his behavior? How can I know if somebody else has transcended the modes? And katham ischaitan, how should we transcend the modes if we are not yet transcended? So then Krishna describes, what are the internal symptoms? Internally, one is not affected by the arrival and the departure of the modes. Sometimes we will feel very agitated, sometimes we will feel very illuminated. Sometimes we'll feel very lethargic. But one sees that these are just happening because of the modes. And udasina vadasinam gunairyona vichaljate. So one who sees, okay, so yes, I'm feeling a little lusty now. But actually I'm not feeling, it's just my mind feeling, and it's a temporary feeling which will come and go. I'll not get affected by it. So if somebody can, that means basically just as in the beginning of spiritual life, we start understanding, I'm not my body. So as we advance in spiritual life, we start understanding I am not my mind. And we can separate the emotions of our mind from our perception. That means, okay, mind is feeling something, but it's not my feeling. When I can understand this, then it is that a person has transcended the modes. So these are the internal symptoms when I can understand if I have transcended. And externally, which a person is very equipoised in everything. He says, Sama sukha dhaka sastha, sama loshtashma kanchana, tulya priya priyodhiras. Is equipoise. Happiness, distress, pleasure, pain don't affect him. And then finally he decides, how does one transcend the modes? Mamchayo avyabhicharena. By unbreakable bhakti. Now Krishna had talked about avyabhichari bhakti in the 13th chapter. As one of the qualities of jnana. Now we quote this verse very often, but this verse is actually very puzzling. What is Krishna telling over here? By Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Kalpate means to become qualified. So Krishna is telling that by unbreakable devotional service to me, you will become qualified to attain Brahman. You will become qualified to attain moksha. Because attaining Brahman is attaining moksha. So now we may wonder, actually bhakti is not meant for moksha. But Krishna is telling by bhakti will attain moksha. Arjuna is saying, but how is it that by bhakti they will attain Brahman? Then Krishna calls by, actually Brahmano hi pratishta. At Brahman, I am the support of that Brahman. So he describes that, Vishnu Acharya Thakur describes that there are two ways. If a devotee is practicing this unbreakable devotional service, then he will attain me. He will attain Brahman, but on the Brahman platform he will discover me. But if a jnani is practicing bhakti, then he will attain Brahman and he will discover me as Brahman. Just like we say, for a devotee, death comes as Krishna, and for a non-devotee, Krishna comes as death. So like that, for a bhakta, Brahman comes as Bhagawan. For a jnani, Bhagawan comes as Brahman. Now this jnani is not Mayavadi, this is a Brahmavadi. That's how, there he describes Brahmanohi Patishtaham. And then after describing this, how by unbreakable devotional service, one attains liberation, one attains Brahman, which can be either impersonal liberation or personal liberation. There's a little confusion here. Is it personal or impersonal? And already Krishna has made it clear that personal is better than impersonal. But then he starts describing spontaneously, without any question, a transitional question in the 15th chapter, he starts describing further how the Sangha takes place. In the 14th chapter, he described in abstract conceptual analysis how the modes bind. Now he'll give it through an analogy of the upside down tree. The upside down tree. And the key principle over here is that asanga shastrena drudhena chitva. You know, this word sangha is coming again and again. Sangha was the first 13.22, it was there. And guna sangha was described in the 14th chapter. And now again, from sangha we have to have asanga. Asanga means detachment. by the weapon of detachment, cut yourself off from the tree of material existence. So this tree is very interesting, as I was discussing in the morning. It's upside down tree. It's upside down tree. Why? Because it's reflection. And the upper planets, or the root of it, is Brahmaloka. And from there it down goes downwards towards the Patal Lokas. So they are the lowest. And Krishna describes who is watering this tree. The three modes are the water of this tree. And he says the leaves of this tree are the Vedic hymns. Chanda. Now why is comparing the leaves to Chanda? Because if you remember in the second chapter, Krishna said, Yam imam pushpitam vacham. So from the leaves come the fruits. So from the Vedic hymns come the fruits of Dharmarthakam. So Krishna is saying they are temporary. And Krishna says, interestingly, not that one who knows these Vedic hymns knows me. He says, knows the Vedas. He says, one who knows this whole tree knows the Vedas. And then after describing the one, if you cut off this tree, he says you have to cut off this tree, go to the root of this tree, and after you go to the root of the tree, beyond that you have to go to the supreme person from whom this tree has come. Very clearly, you have to go to the person. And then Arjuna gets a question, okay, if somebody gets liberated from, succeeds in cutting off this tree, what happens? If somebody doesn't succeed in cutting off from this tree, what happens? So Krishna describes, if you cut off from the tree, then what will happen? He'll come back to my eternal abode. It's the second time Krishna is going to talk about his spiritual world. 8.20, 21, 22 he talked first. Now 15.7 he's telling, you know this first, we'll decide it together. Natad bha